For November the 20th, 2015, we talk about Fallout 4, the Game Award nominees, and we ask you about your favorite open world finds. Welcome to Level 128. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. So we were away last week, fortunately Jala and John stepped in with a bonus level about Leviathan: Last Day of the Decade, and I've heard good things about it. I've stayed away from it because of spoilers, but people seem to enjoy that. Thanks everybody for understanding about us being away. I had some family medical stuff to attend to. Everything has worked out fine so far, so that's good. I don't know. Other than that, like I'm too busy to like breathe. This has been the craziest month in the entire world for me.
Now, has it been mostly network stuff, or is it network job and everything stuff?
Oh, network job and everything. Two live events, this family thing, job, just generally being the job, and then also getting ready for Duckstream coming up. Like all of that is just conspiring to make it so that I am desperately looking forward to the month of December, which never happens.
This is the point in the sitcom where your long lost son knocks on your door. He's like, Dad, Mom sent me to come live with you. I exist.
Oh no, I don't. Who has time for hijinks?
And I have a grandson. I think that was the premise of the
Oh man.
You might be a little young for that one. It really stretched on the casting.
Emmanuel Lewis, what are you doing here? That's pretty much it here. Anybody have any cool anecdotes from the past week or so?
Nah, man.
Nah.
I play games while traveling. That's my cool anecdote.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of fits into the grind.
I saw a Radiohead tribute concert. That was cool.
Cool.
I have loved every tribute concert I've been to.
Just because
is Radiohead dead?
No.
I thought.
Do they have to be?
I thought the person had to.
No. Printhead
is dead. How tribute concerts work?
No, I think that a tribute band is just a different way of saying cover band. Am I correct?
See, I thought that was the difference.
Yeah. I don't know. I think vintage just means it belonged to somebody else.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how old it is. Yeah. I don't know. Like I haven't been to see any tribute bands, so I can't really say.
So just to justify it, because I feel like tribute bands probably get a bad rap. What it was is it was like 15 bands, and each one played like one or two songs.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Huh. That feels like a lot of setup and teardown time.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
An hour between each two-song set.
Yeah.
Just in between each song, the lights come up. Just there's no energy in the room. Like there's no momentum maintained. Yeah. Huh. Oh, you know what else happened since we recorded last? The meetup down here in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, everybody, for coming out to that. I did not expect that bar downtown to be as busy as it got.
Which bar was it?
It's a place called 16-Bit, which is a chain of bar/arcades. There's one in each of the big C cities in Ohio. So,
strict policy. Only cities beginning with C.
Yeah, you know, Chillicothe, Canton, all the big ones. but no, it's a bar, and they have some arcade machines, and just way too many people. You can't even move around. But
oh my god, there was a line for every like there wasn't just someone at every game. There was a line for every game.
Yeah. It was also a Friday night, so that's probably the case. I'm happy that they're successful. It's like a cool place, and their beer selection's pretty good and all of that. At one point we had a cocktail made out of a rocket pop, didn't we, Dennis?
Oh yeah, bomb pop.
Yeah, bomb pop. There we go. Boy oh boy, do I not like crowds like that. So
but we stayed pretty well stuck to our table the entire time. Like we kind of camped out a spot and had a good area set aside for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of our listeners, Paul, he brought me and Gary gifts, two R-Zones, which are Tiger handheld electronics that you strap to your forehead like a VR thing. You saw me in those, didn't you?
No, I must have missed that.
I'm pretty sure I would have remembered that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I need to see what this looks like.
Huh. Yeah, take a look. It makes you look like a real space cadet. Just picture me putting that on and at the same time, like, okay, I've got that's funny. And then somebody says, Cole, what are you wearing? And I look, and it's somebody I went to college with. He's tending bar. This is the first time I've seen him in years, and he sees me wearing this stupid... Yes.
And did you say, like, oh, it's a Google Glass, man?
Yeah, it's Google Glass, circa 1995. Yeah. That went great. And then also the stuff in Columbus as well. That was fantastic. So thanks, everybody, for coming out to that.
I very much enjoyed Gary playing on the body piano.
Yep. Yeah, that was good, and that was turned up way louder than you would expect it to be.
The body piano is either something out of Silent Hill or a strip club. I'm not sure which.
Yeah, it's more of a both. It's like a xylophone. No, it looks like a vintage 70s era organ. Except each key is attuned to a sample of a bodily function. So, and you have buttons like to change like registers on it. So at the upper end, it's like all like breathing. And then as you go down, it's like different things in the body. So there's like throat clears and, you tend to camp out at the farts.
Okay. So that is in fact how they actually do all of the generic grunts in a game.
Some of them, maybe. I think that maybe there's like a stock library that they use, but a lot of the generic grunts, those are that's actually the voice actors. Like you'll hear voice actors talking about doing video game work, and it's like you have to do 16 different versions of.
They just hire one of the developers, like 3-year-old, to come in and like hit you in the stomach with a wiffle ball bat. Yep.
I love the idea that you get to have to actually get hit in the gut every time.
Yeah, it's method Foley. Yeah, so that was cool. What's that?
I'm just laughing at method Foley. I think that's a great concept.
Oh, so yeah, that is the requisite amount of banter. At the beginning, let's see here.
No more.
There's like a meter on our screens that we have to fill up.
Yep, it's the inanity meter. we've got the usual kind of show for you here. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And as usual, we'll start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer first?
Yeah, I got one.
Okay.
It is a Heroes of the Storm story.
Okay.
About them introducing a new character, which it would at first brush be pretty run-of-the-mill. But this character and the way that they're introducing
it. Oh, my God.
So...
It's Cloud Strife.
Yeah. it's so just crazy. I kind of can't believe that it exists and it's worth talking about. So the character is called Cho'Gall. It's a two-headed orc. And the crazy gimmick is that in this like really competitive, five-man team based game, it is one character that's played by two people. So you have one person controls a head that is like melee focused and controls the movement, and the other person controls the head that does ranged combat and buffs. And so I guess on the team, you're sacrificing the mobility and the agility of having two bodies, mm-hmm, for having one really powerful body that has to be played with two people in consort. And that I know of, there is no in-game chat built into Heroes of the Storm. So this kind of assumes that whoever's playing this is going to be plugged to Skype or Mumble or something, or else God help you. It has to be the most infuriating, especially if you're the caster. the most infuriating experience. So that's the hero, which is crazy enough in and of itself.
Okay.
That's not the craziest thing about the way that they are introducing it, though. The craziest thing is how you get a hold of it. So everyone who went to BlizzCon, which just happened, gets access to this hero. And the only way for you to get access yourself, although I imagine you can buy it, I don't know. But the only way to get access to it, you can't pay for it with in-game gold, and I think you can't buy it outright. You have to play with someone who owns the hero.
Oh, so it's going to spread virally.
So it's like a patient zero kind of thing going on. Yeah, where it spreads throughout the community. But it looks like you have to play two games as the hero to unlock it for yourself, mm-hmm. which for someone like me who is relatively casual, and then again, you know, I might not be interested in playing a hero as complex as this, but that's going to be hard to do. Mm-hmm. Just find someone who's willing to subject themselves, find a friend who's willing to subject themselves to my mediocre play for two games straight, uh-huh. which is 40 minutes, a non-trivial amount of your time.
Right.
And that's for, you know, regular length games. Just so I can get this and then foist my mediocrity on other people who are potentially hoping to earn Cho'Gall.
Yeah, so it's like a mandated three-leg race.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Huh.
So, and like I said, if you're not on chat, I can't imagine trying to play this thing effectively.
So you know what I really want to see is I want to see them have like maybe the caster role played by like some competitive here's the storm champion, mm-hmm. and the body/melee be a Twitch plays.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, they're like we're only a couple of steps away from Twitch plays hots.
Yeah, it would be a disaster. But what would be interesting though is like get a really high level player to be one hit and then just randomly pair him up with some with a random person on the internet. I would watch that. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Like this shows a commitment to not doing the usual kind of thing. And I know that sounds like marketing copy or something like that. I feel filthy for even saying that, but like I don't know. Like I wouldn't see it, you know, the way you opened this up is pretty good, or is very apt rather, in relation to this whole genre. Like something this wackadoodle, yeah. just doesn't, I mean, doesn't happen.
Making MOBAs actually be fun almost seems like heresy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and. Yeah, just this blatant disregard for the rules and the willingness to try something that just is the craziest pipe dream and put it into the main game. Be like, hey, it's out there now, so everyone gets this. If you can find someone who has it,
yeah,
is pretty amazing. They, you know, in Hearthstone they did Tavern Brawls, which is like it's in its own special section, right? It's mm-hmm. contained. And they do crazy rules and random stuff in there, but it doesn't really spill over into the main game. This is like dead in the heart of the actual game. Like, I'll be very interested to see, because there's one of two routes, right? One, it's a gimmick character, mm-hmm. and you know, it's we all had our laughs and checked it out, and it was fun. Two, I wonder if, like, you know, these teams are already so coordinated and effective already. If they, you know, if you get two people who are piloting this together well enough, Pacific Rim style, does it just become this unstoppable juggernaut, and it works its way into competitive play in a big way?
So what you're saying is you have to have all competitive teams will need to have one set of twins because they're the only ones who can actually control this abomination.
Yeah.
Even if it ends up being something like a competitive like Marvel versus Capcom, and if this is the person who plays this two-headed guy, or the people who play this two-headed guy are like the person who plays Servbot or Dan. You know, like these really low tier joke characters and competitive play as like a wild card. That's still pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really pretty awesome.
How'd you like that fighting game, Cut Ben?
Which fighting game?
Oh, the Servbot or Dan. Sorry. I don't know.
Are Servbots the little Lego men?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I thought that I did good.
There are people out there who appreciate it, okay. I am sure.
If I didn't make an ass of myself, more than usual anyway. Huh. Well, that's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Ben, how about you? What's your story?
Yeah, so my story is that they announced the Game Award nominees this week, and that's going to be in 3 weeks. And if it's like last year, then it'll be in Vegas. But yeah, so some entries of note. So the Game of the Year nominees were Bloodborne, Fallout 4, Metal Gear Solid 5, Super Mario Maker, and The Witcher 3. So mostly AAA games, but in addition, they also had Independent Game, which is where they kind of pick up the smaller games. And the nominees they had for that were Axiom Verge, Her Story, Ori and the Blind Forest, Rocket League, and Undertale.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of an interesting mix. I thought it was interesting that Rocket League was on it, because it's, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, it's a cool game, so it's cool to see, like, just a small
I know our community in particular, like, loves Rocket League.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just a random subset and everyone else has forgotten about it. And you know, Duckfeed Group is the hangers on. But it seems to be just this real phenomenon.
No, I'm pretty sure when this demons attack, we'll detect people who are now soulless by who doesn't love Rocket League.
I own a copy of Rocket League, and I enjoy the idea of it. I've never played it, but I think that Rocket League was definitely helped by the fact that it was PS4 and Steam.
Like, oh, yeah.
They hit those vectors really hard.
Well, and it was not just PS4, but PlayStation Plus, so anyone who had an online connection was playing it for free.
Yeah.
I just think it's surprising because it's such a bite-sized game, you know, like the programming on it's pretty minimal, but, like, you know, it has a deep strategy to it. So it's pretty cool. So some personal things, I was sad that Arkham Knight was not nominated for much. It got a few nominations, like best art direction, but I was, I really like that game. So,
I feel like Fallout 4 for Game of the Year seems kind premature. Of like to me.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I dramatically enjoyed that game, but, like, it wasn't like
Fallout 4?
I'm sorry. This entire week has been me screwing up Fallout and Far Cry.
Okay.
Far Cry there you 4. Go. I agree with you with respect to Far Cry.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're surprised that Far Cry 4 was on the list?
It was not on the list.
Oh, okay.
Fallout was on the list. Far Cry was not. Did I miss?
Okay. Well, I will then say I think it's dumb that Fallout's on the list just because it's been out for like 2 days.
Yes.
It's a little surprising, and even the people, even reviewers haven't had their hands on it for that long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that even is a little bit trickier, like that timing, like what's the award period for movies, right? Like usually games that come out or movies that come out in December are the ones that are big award pushes, right? Because the nominations happen like a couple months later, so they haven't, you know, fallen out of favor. In that case, it's really bizarre that these awards happen in December.
Well, and what is the committee that's selecting these, and what is the percentage chance that all of that committee has played Fallout for a significant amount leading into their voting?
I don't know enough about it to say.
Yeah, I've been to the show once, and I have no idea who reviews it. So,
the Shadow Syndicate.
I guess my default assumption would be that it's like
the publishers,
spiders. Yeah, the publishers. Yeah.
Activision nominates Activision.
Wow. Yeah.
I would see, it seems to me that for like Game of the Year, throwing out Fallout 4 for just being like dumb timing, it seems like Witcher 3 and Bloodborne could both kind of duke it out.
Yeah,
I think if I had to pick from that list, I would pick Witcher 3 for my favorite, but yeah.
Yeah, it'll be odd if Fallout wins, actually. But
yeah,
I mean, not that I have any opinion about the game. I've barely played it. But
so,
like,
odd to the point that it illegitimizes these awards that are 2 years old.
I don't think that they were okay. For me to say I don't think they were legitimate makes me sound like incredibly like blah about this thing. Like, legitimacy is such a weird idea about these things for me.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, it's I don't know, like, it's possible people could have played it, but again, we just made that joke about publishers probably being the ones who pick the games.
Yeah. No, it's eyebrow raising to say the least.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between video games and movies in that, you know, like, yeah, in the case of Fallout, it's like a 40 or 50 hour commitment as opposed to a 2 hour commitment. So
yeah.
I would also say, and this is a little bit getting to the grind, if a significant degree of the criteria is like technical mastery and like design, I would say Fallout should not get it.
Well, I mean, it's a Bethesda game, like, and I'm not saying that like Bethesda does bad work, but you walk into that knowing what to expect.
Yeah, well, but that's, and you kind of in you you win a
you walk into a UA Bowl movie knowing what to expect. That doesn't mean you nominate it.
Well, yeah.
Although, if I would definitely nominate every movie made.
But on a similar point, you know, like, if it is like an open world game, you know, like, does the person playing it actually, you know, like, in some cases playing the critical path, you know, might not be sufficient to getting a full picture of the game.
You said 40, 50 hours, like, people play those for hundreds of hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm more thinking, I just think, the controls and like interface is really incredibly poorly designed. And it seems to me like I think that's a legitimate thing to judge. I don't necessarily think like it's legitimate to judge like, you know, did you collect all 100 golden widgets?
Yeah,
like, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, like definitely. I think that is on point. Let's save further Fallout 4 discussion for that section.
For the Fallout 4 section.
Yeah. For stepping back from this for just a moment, like, you reading that list aloud, both the AAA ones and the indie games, I was like, 2015 was actually pretty good. Like, in terms of games that came out. Like, there's a bunch of good stuff on those lists.
And here's the thing, I can't believe we're almost back around to title of the year.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. We probably ought to I'll get something together for you. Don't
Toady.
Worry.
It's been but it's been 50-ish episodes. Holy crap.
Yeah. We'll get it worked out. Don't worry.
Excited.
Just as a side note, there is a spoiler in the nominations list. So
what do you mean?
Whatever. I don't want to say anymore because I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, best voice acting or best character appearance?
Perhaps.
Like that.
It says best sudden death of a main character. That's an odd category.
They're really padding the time on that show.
Best mid-game genre shift. That's really weird. David, how about you? You got a story?
Sure. Find an article. Apparently in Rise of the Tomb Raider, they've got a special system for people who stream on Twitch, where at periodic points throughout the game, the viewers are presented with an option to select one of several modifications or events they can trigger in the next part of the game. So, like, examples they give are, like, making enemies more difficult or putting in, like, a big head mode. And apparently, it looks like there's 64 different options, and the developers have actually, like, picked, I guess it says 186 pairs you can choose between, so it sounds like it's kind of designed for the choices, you know, have been pre-designed to be meaningful.
Okay.
And then the other interesting thing is for the Twitch viewers, if they are viewing the stream when like certain events happen, so I'm assuming this means like, you know, when players like beat a quest or defeat a boss or something like that, they'll receive in-game currency for their own game.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that seems kind of cool. So kind of a neat all the way around.
I think you could do something so cool with this. Like, think of it from like a horror from beyond our comprehension type of thing, where like there's an item in the game that is only in a couple people's games, and if you just see it through the Twitch channel, like you're tainted and you you like, you know, this item enters your game because you've seen it. Now you can't unsee it.
So Twitch plays the ring.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
PS 7 days.
But yeah, more of this, please.
Yeah, no, this is ridiculously inventive.
Yeah.
Huh.
This feels like the right way to dip your toe in as well, right? Like
with Twitch stuff.
With having the game be affected by Twitch stuff, like you could really easily be overbearing with it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But this is kind of slightly apart from the main game. It's fun. It feels like a kind of a light but meaningful interaction, like you described. And so it feels like the right level that isn't mm-hmm. gimmicky, but it still has an impact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. I'm just picturing this being like a duck amuck kind of thing where it's an antagonistic relationship between the player and the Twitch audience. Like the Twitch audience is visiting ruin upon you.
See, I was more imagining like, was it Running Man style?
Oh yeah. But no, this is really forward looking, it feels like. That's it's kind of a gimmick, but like cool stuff starts as gimmicks sometimes.
Yeah. I know that the like platform for viewing Dota, while didn't have any interactivity with the game, there was a lot of stuff in terms of like you could shift the slider for what team you thought was going to win and see that mm-hmm. real time, or you could like push a button to cheer for one side or the other. Yeah. But I would be interested to see more of that stuff in Twitch. Yeah. Just ways to not even interact with the game, but just interact with the audience mm-hmm. watching the game.
Yeah. It'd be cool to have something in like Rock Band where they can give you the feedback instead of your performance gives the feedback.
Or the audience helps select the upcoming song.
That'd be cool too. Yeah.
Looks like I'm playing Freebird again.
Well, you have to gray Freebird out. Or anybody who wants to recommend Freebird has to pay a dollar.
And it still doesn't play it.
Yep.
You're rich overnight.
And you and Harmonix split the proceeds. I've got a story. So Nintendo last week had a pretty big event with their, their Nintendo Direct, the first one after, I forget the name, Iwata, was that? Yep, there we go, Iwata passed away. And people got really excited about this. I made that joke about the Cloud appearing in Smash Brothers, but there was one story that kind of stuck out to me because I kind of thought it would never happen, which is that Dragon Quest VII and Dragon Quest VIII are coming to America. Via the Nintendo 3DS. So they already came to America. I'm going to quickly backpedal from that. Dragon Quest VII on the PlayStation and Dragon Quest VIII on the PS2. However, these are updated remakes, and hopefully Dragon Quest VII will be comprehensible and also playable this time. So
high bar shoot
details.
It's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I just want one or the other. But this is going to be happening sometime next year, and the 3DS seems like a great system for this.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I don't have experience at all with the series.
Likewise.
I really liked Dragon Quest, like, 1 and 3, mm-hmm. And I've never screwed with any of the others, and I don't know. Like, are they still... Is it still that same, like 1 through 3 were all kind of the same, you know, part of the same saga? Mm-hmm. Is it still doing that thing?
I don't know, because I'm so unfamiliar with 4, 5, and 6, and people are going to say, burn him! But so I don't know if they continue. They have similar aesthetics, you know, they still have the Dragon Ball Z kind of style. I forget that mm-hmm. artist's name. I assume that there's some kind of through line. I don't know if it's like a Final Fantasy thing where every game has a Chocobo and every game has a Cid. Every Dragon Quest has a slime. But like Dragon
it's
Quest
gotta
7,
have a slime.
Yeah.
Also Akira Toriyama.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. It's funny because you talked about 1 and 3, and then you, also you played the shit out of some Dragon Quest Monsters, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's up there on one of my favorite games.
But. Yeah. Like it's funny because like those early Dragon Quest remakes, those hit us at about the right time on the Game Boy Advance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or Game Boy Color, like those remakes. We're kind of a historical oddity that makes sense for us to have played 1 and 3.
Yeah. I think for me, some of it, like there was a whole run where, like basically I went with like Nintendo system. So there's a whole run of games that were like, you know, PlayStation exclusive that I've never played. Mm-hmm. And then also now, more recently, just I no longer have time in my life, unfortunately, for like JRPGs.
Yeah.
Just kind of because.
because they're JRPGs.
One, three especially were.
Yeah. Huh. So yeah, this is exciting. Anytime an unlikely game comes out on an unlikely system at an unlikely date, I will be there. I'll be paying attention to it. Yeah. Cool.
River fan translation. It's just a few more lines done. I'll be there.
You're giving me way more credit. I'm just there to like say, huh, that's neat. I'm not actually contributing to any of this. I've never actually made anybody's life better.
I beg to differ. Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you, the listeners, a question, and you, the listeners, answer. Dennis, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, the nice people got asked about open world games and fun things that happen in them completely unrelated to quest lines. So, you know, all the best open world games have a lot more going on than the stuff that's directly related to text that tells you to go places and gives you experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to find out about.
Yeah, and this is timely because of Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The nice people were asked about this. The mean people were asked about escort quests.
Oh, David, you just ruined the fact that there's a nice Facebook and a mean Facebook. Oh, I'm so sorry if you were asked about escort quests.
No, we record two entirely separate podcasts and publish them. So that no one will know.
It's exhausting.
Gotta keep up the illusion.
You have that kind of
well, not anymore. Because this is going to make its way into both of them.
So,
podcast and naughty.
We're going to break it in post.
I'm not clear how we actually produce this.
To be fair, neither am I.
All right.
I get drunk on the weekends and it's a blackout box.
Yep. I just wake up and people say nice things or mean things. It doesn't matter.
9 out of the 10 episodes, perfectly fine. 1 out of every 10 is just me gibbering.
See now I'm just imagining that Cole's like creative process for editing the podcast is basically Alan Wake.
Oh, and then I find scraps of it that foretell plot events.
No, his process, he takes a shot every time Ben says spoilers, every time David says, you know, and I don't know.
You just wanted to say a mean thing about two people on the show.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yes, and spoilers. That's why your answer will be about escort quests.
All right, so just in case anybody was wondering, I hadn't started the timer yet, so you don't need to feel bad. So gonna begin here with what appears to be a new name. I'm sorry if you've commented before, but Callum writes in saying, in the original Skate, I used to enjoy abusing the physics to get into areas of the maps that you shouldn't be able to get to. When they added running to the second game and object placement in the third, my hobby continued until I ended up finding the game boring if I wasn't jumping off of one of the city skyscrapers into a quarter pipe. We just call that living the dream, my friend.
So now you know how Tony Hawk feels.
Every day.
It's not extreme enough. Nothing is extreme enough anymore.
He's like Jeff Bridges in Fearless. Huh. Yeah, I like the Skate games. I only ever play the first one. So I like the Skate game. But to any of those where you're trying to break it, like I never played the Old Republic, but I heard that they included kind of objectives and goals for climbing on top of world geometry that you weren't supposed to, just to reward that behavior that they knew people were going to do anyway.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
they did a lot of that in WildStar as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Guild Wars 2, too.
Neat. Let's see here. David, what does Amanda say?
Amanda says, in Fallout New Vegas, there's an old quarry that I stumbled upon at a relatively low level that I was super intrigued by and began to explore until I was immediately wiped out by many death claws. That being said, It was super cool.
Well, you went north, my friend, after you were told so not to.
I'm actually going to step in because I'm going to do a couple of small ones for my answer, but this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this aspect, both because I really like the way that kind of the first segment of the game is like from the very start, you can physically see New Vegas.
Uh-huh.
But there's like this whole series of adventures to get to it. And, you know, it's sort of like the, was it the Citadel and Half-Life 2?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so kind of a similar event.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that, I like the fact that there is a very direct route to get there that it just happens to be full of Deathclaws.
Oh, yeah. Deathclaws and Cazadors. Like,
yes.
So that plus the glitchiness, does that mean that there's a lot of speedrunning that happens for Fallout New Vegas?
Oh, most definitely.
There has to be, yeah.
I mean, it's a Bethesda game. I hate to use that twice in one episode, but...
Yeah.
It's an Obsidian game.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Well, it's based on Bethesda tech, so it gets an out.
Bethesdian.
Yeah.
There's if you do an int or intelligence run through of the game where you like start off with 9 intelligence and then rush to get the intelligence implant, you have to pass through the death claws.
Or can't you just do like 8 intelligence and glasses, or are glasses perception?
I think they're perception.
I believe they're perception, but I could be wrong.
Okay, the like, what is it, the four eyes perk or whatever?
Oh yeah,
maybe you could try and take some mentats before you level up or something.
But also, I feel like Deathclaws and Cazadors would be like an awesome name for a band or something.
What does Cazador actually mean?
It means hunter in Spanish.
Oh, thank you. Huh.
David translate.
Yes.
You prepared. pretty cool. Continuing that, Ben, what does Roop say?
Roop says, in Fallout series, Harold's storyline was something really touching.
Yeah, that was something. So I played Fallout 3 first, and Harold is the guy who you meet in Oasis who is a tree.
Okay.
But his story actually starts all the way back in Fallout 1, where he's just a ghoul who has like a plant growing out of his forehead. You find him again in Fallout 2, and then it's all kind of proceeded to its natural ending point in Fallout 3. Like, it's pretty cool. Like... It's weird how I kind of reversed it, but I could see the way that quest ends in Fallout 3 being especially touching.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Franz says, just walking around and admiring the vibrant living world in Outcast. When I try to replay the game these days, I can't get over the clunkiness. But back in 1999, I hadn't seen anything like it.
I'm not sure what game they're talking about.
Okay, I'm not the only one.
Yeah, so I'm going to do a quick search on this. It appears to be a PC game. It's not Jedi Outcast, which is also a game that I played.
It's also a good game.
It was published by Infogrames, and it is an action adventure game that kind of looks like it has some of the same terrain generation as like Tribes a little bit. I need to look into this more.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've never played this, but my understanding is this is kind of like a niche, like big time cult game that is apparently crazy ahead of its time.
Yeah, I could believe it. I wonder, this couldn't be very costly on GOG, or sorry, Jodge, which is where you can get it now. I'm curious about this because I recall seeing like ads for this in like GamePro. In the early 2000s.
GamePro, the magazine that, you know, everyone inherently had, whether you wanted it or not.
Well, it's not Game Informer.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Game Informer. I'm sorry.
Yep. Let's see here. Let's take a look here. Ollie writes in saying, there are tons of pre-organized side quests and open-world games, but I will leave them in favor of a random thing that happened to me in Fable 2. I was having a bad day and randomly, childishly, decided to kill a village. We've all done it, he said defensively. In the end, I stopped and left one or two alive. In about 20 gameplay hours, probably 2 weeks real time, later, I passed through the same village and a guy ran up to me and shouted, "It's him, the murderer!" or something like that, and some nearby soldiers aggroed, and I died. It wasn't a quest, but it was a real what the fuck, whoa, cool moment for me in an otherwise mildly disappointing game. Also, Dark Souls.
Yeah. I like the fact that apparently in the Fable universe, just running up to someone and shouting, "It's him, the murderer," apparently counts for burden of proof.
I love that somebody snapped a picture and like they were just like wearing it down by staring at it and just trying to rub it out. Like, yeah.
Maybe it was a really bloodthirsty village after all of them were murdered.
Yep. I don't know. It's like they had some kind of need for some kind of venge. Maybe re of the re variety. Yeah. I don't know. So that's funny. I wonder if Ollie had heard of the, you know, kind of pre-release hype for Fable 1, because Fable 1, the whole thing was you could plant a tree as a child and come back and see that same tree as an adult. So that was one of the first things I tried to do in Fable 1, but I could totally see somebody being sane and not falling for that.
Yeah.
Fucking more nukes.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does David say?
David says, Bethesda always puts in good Easter eggs in their games. I particularly liked the notched pickaxe in Skyrim as a Minecraft reference.
That was in the midst of like a huge lawsuit between them, right? Because Notch was developing a game called Scrolls, which I think eventually came out and wasn't that good or wasn't that notable.
Yeah, it was forgettable.
Yeah, and Bethesda was pursuing litigation against him at the time for trademark infringement because Scrolls is so close to Elder Scrolls.
Well, I mean, also trolls, but of a different kind.
IP trolls. Yeah, so that was a funny thing, and it was hard to tell if that was in jest or not.
That's the one where Notch just, like, challenged them to a game of, like, Unreal Tournament or something?
Maybe. That seems like something he would do.
Yeah, I never heard if they actually went through with it or not.
I don't know. Let's see here. Ben, what does Steven say?
Steven says, after emerging from the initial dungeon in Skyrim, you're finally let loose into the world facing the direction of the town where your next quest marker is. If you ignore this, though, and turn around, you'll eventually find a house with a bandit standing out in front guarding it. Once inside the house, there isn't much to see or loot as far as gold or valuable potions or weaponry go, but if you look really closely next to the bookcase, there's a button that leads down to an intricate underground hideout where the bandit keeps all sorts of treasures. Also, by listening in on the conversations and reading journal entries, you find out that there's a group planning on turning on their leader and taking all of the treasure she keeps for herself. She is secretly sending off gold and jewels to help out her family farm. Of course, I killed all of them and took the gold for myself because it's Skyrim.
Huh.
I did not know that. I did not know that history was there.
There's a bunch of cool stuff. That one of the stories that didn't make my final entry here was has to do with Oblivion, where, you know, it was really kind of my first time playing an Elder Scrolls game in depth after bouncing off of Morrowind like 5 years earlier. But going into a town as a thief and then just kind of breaking in, like, oh, there's a cellar door here, and going in and finding out, oh, wait, this guy's a necromancer because he has like a shrine and shit down here. Like, that's really cool, isn't it? And then stealing all of his valuable stuff and then becoming head of the Necromancer Guild or the assassin or whatever. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Ollie say? Oh, wait. Is that the right order? Or did Ollie
posted earlier?
Yes.
So twice,
what does Tanner say?
Tanner says, rolling through a base in Phantom Pain and finding a Joy Division cassette is pretty much untouchable.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one, too.
Can you explain?
Oh, Joy Division's just a band. And so it's a band that is popular and well known, but it's still weird to see their music in a video game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weirder to see it on an attack helicopter as you land.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there are these cassettes, like you collect them to play on your mobile Death Fortress.
Yeah, to play in your helicopter. So, you know, in previous episodes when we've talked about playing Manhunter or sorry, right. Man Eater. Sorry, you know
the novel Man Hunter. They have a projector that plays the movie on the ground. Yeah.
No, it's just an audiobook of Man Hunter.
Lada DeVita. Yeah.
Yep, my bad. but yeah, so it's just finding some weird quirky music to play on that. And that is put in there to please people of a certain disposition. I presume people who are favorably disposed towards Joy Division.
Do you think like each dev got one pick and it's like, all right, you get a song. Which song are you putting in?
Knowing how much Kojima likes his music, I think that he probably had a pretty tight lid on that.
You think it's a curated list?
Maybe.
They just stole his iPod and put it on shuffle mode.
Let's see here. I'll pick this up with Nathan, who writes in saying, everyone is probably tired of hearing about Metal Gear Solid 5, but stumbling upon an outpost in Afghanistan just as a sandstorm is about to hit is a nice stress reliever. It takes about 45 seconds to CQC the entire camp, and when you do, the game tells you how much of a hero you are for giving 6 people concussions. Other than that, everything I stumbled upon in Skyrim was excellent until Dark Souls soured me on that game's combat system. I could see that.
Greatest hits list right there.
That just reminds me of like that weird time when Skyrim was considered to be like this kind of like in cahoots or running against Dark Souls because they just happened to both be kind of medieval RPG-esque games.
Are we talking, was this before Dark Souls was released?
This was, they came out at around the same time. Dark Souls came out in October of 2011, and Skyrim came out in November. So they were seen to be competing games, although they really don't do much of the same things at all.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, I'm sure the internet being what it is and stuff like that, I almost can't see, they just seem so different.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's funny. So there's so much mystery to the systems of Metal Gear Solid 5, but I kind of want to go back and see if the time it takes for people that you Fulton away to become active personnel is at all affected by how grievously you injure them before you bring them in.
Well, are you, I guess this is kind of game. Are you just straight up like Stockholm affecting these people?
Oh yeah, like you have Ocelot on your side, and he's in there working his magic, trying to get them indoctrinated for you.
Okay, like, okay. So it is as sinister as it comes across.
Oh, most definitely. And they try and hand wave it by saying, "Oh, you are the most the most legendary mercenary there is." So they will bend over backwards to join your force. But I mean, come on.
Huh. Not a lot of loyal people in Afghanistan, apparently, in the 80s.
Or Africa. Let's see here. David, what does Sam say?
Sam says, when some random Japanese guy I got paired with in Journey showed me that any game can be a open world if you try hard enough. Sorry, just the way this is written, I'm just imagining like this thing where this like an 80s-esque, like he learned an important lesson about like creativity and like finding the joy in everyday life.
Yeah, it's about friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how, like, I always saw Journey as like a beautiful hallway.
Yeah, I've zero interaction with the game, so I'm not sure about this one.
Yeah.
You can literally beat it in like 3 hours.
Yeah, it is a one sitting with a bathroom break and a stretch break. Like, yeah.
But apparently not if you play it right.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Gary say?
Gory Battlefield says, Dunwich building in Fallout 3 is pretty special. Looking forward to the Lovecraft shit that's in Fallout 4 as soon as I get 2 hours to rub together.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's think about that. This is New England now, right? So there should be a ton of that.
Yep. No, I'm down. I'm in his boat. I can't wait to find those 2 hours.
Yeah. Trust me, like 2 hours will get you through like the opening tutorial.
I'm through the tutorial. It took me a week to do it, but I did it. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Robin say?
Robin says, piling on the Fallout love a bit more here, But without spoiling too much, stumbling on the swan encounter in Fallout 4 was a fantastic combination of surprise, terror, and joy.
I don't know what to say to that.
I was going to say, it doesn't land for me yet either.
I will take your word, Robin.
Soon.
Soon. Huh. I'll pick up with Steven saying, I hate to jump on the Fallout 3 bandwagon. Nobody hates it as much as they say they do. I hate to jump on the Fallout 3 bandwagon, but I'd say running into inter/intraspecies combat really helps make the world feel alive. It's something I wish more games would do, as it always feels like you are discovering something changing in the world. Throw on a ghoul mask and you have some really immersive encounters fighting alongside your rotting brethren against raiders and robots alike. Yeah.
They do have good classes of enemies, I will say.
For sure. Like, and when they start mixing them up, it's great, too. Mm. Hmm. Let's see, David, what does Phil say?
Phil says, the one that sticks in my mind the most is from Morrowind. After you do all the character creation and tutorial tasks, you're given a location to go to and nothing else. The first time I played, I started walking there, only to find a guy fall from the sky and die. Mm-hmm. I searched his body only to find a note and three scrolls of Icarian flight, which allowed me to jump really high. Landing is another matter. My character cratered into the side of a mountain. At that point, I knew I'd love this game.
Yeah. Yes. We talked about that in the Watch Out for Fireballs about Morrowind, but that is such a great moment to like kind of just teach you that anything can happen. Like all you need is that little drop of mystery right towards the beginning to start looking for more guys falling out of the sky for the rest of the time you're going to spend with this game. Yeah.
It's cool too to show you the entire map before you explore it up close.
Yeah. Ben, what does Gustavo say?
Gustavo says, in Fallout 4, I found kind of the location of the Coast Guard base in downtown Boston. Sadly, the location is just a generic industrial pier, and the compression of the scale gives it kind of an Uncanny Valley look to it. But it was still neat.
Yeah. Gustavo has a reason to be familiar with the Coast Guard outpost there.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Cool. Yeah. Definitely finding those real life places or the closest approximation thereof. Mm. And then finally, Dennis, what does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says, I found Cheers in Fallout 4 a few days ago, and that made me well happy for a while. Skeleton Norm and Cliff were proper spooky.
Yep. That is one of those things that I'm super happy wasn't spoiled for me, because I would totally have gone looking for the same thing.
Nice.
Yep. So I'm still going to make a pilgrimage to Cheers or whatever that bar is called, because it's fucking Cheers, people. Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah, let's go around with ours. I need a second to get my thoughts in order here, so I will choose somebody to go first. In this case, David, you alluded to having a couple.
Sure. Yeah. So I already mentioned Fallout, and I think I'll just say very generically pretty much all of EverQuest. pretty much just the whole freaking thing. Yeah. I think one of the big ones for me is in pretty much all of the Stalker series, but particularly in Call of Pripyat. I don't speak Russian. They actually added in random blowouts. So basically, as you're exploring the open world, you'll randomly get messages that there's a blowout coming in. You have like 20 seconds to get undercover. And if not under... Say that again?
Oh, it's just that's an interesting idea.
Hmm. Yeah, and if you're not undercover, you just straight up die. And the thing is, this is a game that really kind of emphasizes, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble if you like rush into an area without like scouting it out and making sure it's, there's not enemies, it's not mutants, stuff like that. And, it basically forces you to take off running. So it would be sort of equivalent if, Dark Souls randomly, required you to just like start dashing off into areas without having your shield raised.
I mean, it's kind of the equivalent of God throwing a grenade at your position, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So yeah, that was kind of a neat thing. And then after you know, it's a thing where you basically you get into cover, and often like you know, some other guys that are out exploring might like get in with it, and you kind of hunker down, and you know, the world and skies like flashing and stuff outside your position, and then you go out and loot everyone who didn't make it to cover.
Nice. So. Huh. How about you, Ben?
I had a hard time coming up with one, because most of the cool like side things are typically tied to some sort of side quest or some sort of like or some sort of intentionally designed, I guess. But I think one of the cool things is I remember back in Just Cause 2, there's is before the time of recording, being able to record gameplay experiences on the PlayStation. But there was one moment where I blew up a shack, but I was able to hook on to a side panel like as it was blowing up, and so then I was like attached to the side panel as it like flew down a mountain, and so it was just like it was just a really cool experience, like to see that perspective. It felt like Interstellar or The Martian. But yeah, no, that was cool.
Have you seen on YouTube any of the like stunt videos people have put up from Just Cause 2?
I saw the ones that they promoted when they released the game, but I haven't seen like fan made ones.
Oh yeah, there's Well, you remember for like was it GTA 3? People would do like the you know jump out of a jetliner and like land in like a swimming pool in someone's backyard. Yeah, those sure. sorts of stunts. It's kind of those sorts of things, but it's you know a lot of just the precision.
Yeah, with a grappling hook and a parachute. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
So my favorite is fairly recent, and it comes from Guild Wars 2. You know, there are all these kind of lookout points that you have in game where you can get experience just for climbing somewhere with a really good vista. And one of the ones that you climb up in Lion's Arch, it's like particularly tall and takes a particularly long time to get to. It's like a lighthouse that's on a harbor, and you're just running up and up and up and up and up, and it's like, oh my god, I can't believe that I'm spending so much time like trying to get up to this place. You finally get to the top, and there's like a little diving board type thing.
Yes.
And goggles, and you can choose to put on the goggles, which immediately like strips you down to a bathing suit, and then dive off of this diving board into the bay, and you're falling for, you know, a good 15 seconds, I would say, which is really just an incredible amount of fun. But it's, you know, you kind of get lured up there just to, because you're looking for experience or you're trying to complete the area or what have you. And then there's just this special little reward waiting for you there. And I understand, David, you can probably confirm there's more of these places.
I don't know if there's more like diving places, but you know, the vistas are all over the place and there's constantly stuff like that where they're just kind of doing stuff with you. Mm-hmm. The one I was going to add is it's I guess one of the systems is you know you can pick up like improvised weapons and like you know summoned weapons, stuff like that, that will temporarily change what attacks you have on your hot menu bar. Mm-hmm. And the bathing suit thing or goggles or whatever are programmed as that. So also as you're jumping, your hot menu bar is full of like, do a flip, you know, do
I missed that.
Stuff like that.
Dang, I'll have to do it again.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I remember that. So I kind of remember World of Warcraft had kind of a similar thing on the Twin Colossuses that we did as like guild expedition with back when League of Honor was still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Huh. I'm going to go ahead and do mine real quick. So I think that Fallout New Vegas is great for this stuff, specifically because there is a trait you can take that that says, hey, you like finding this stuff in a game, and then puts it in there. So,
oh, yeah.
Yep, the weird wasteland thing. So normally I'm not that big of a fan of reference kind of stuff, unless I am, in which case, cool, I will go for it. Like, it's all good, it's fine. But finding the skeletons that are Ben and Beru, or sorry, Owen and Beru, rather, or the one I really like is the reference to Johnny Five Aces. Like, they've got this crazy reference to a terrible something awful meme it just put in there. That is, yeah, just four balls on the edge of a cliff with five aces right next to it, which is something made for an audience of maybe five people. But then, like, down to like whole sections of their DLC that have like references to the Venture Brothers, because James Urbaniak did one of the voices of one of the AI modules.
That's really cool.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like they kind of knew what stuff to pick, and also some of it didn't land. Like, I'm not that big of a Monty Python fan, but I could see how that would delight some people who would get the reference to.
Are we talking about the I Got Better?
Maybe,
because I loved that.
I forget. I didn't.
Okay. Sorry, I'm gonna go off. When with my aforementioned, you know, kind of your quest to New Vegas, one of my favorite parts is right before you get to New Vegas, you finally track down the guy who shot you.
Oh yeah.
And you can just go in and kill him, or you can talk to him. He does the whole, wait, I killed you. And one of your proper one of your possible responses is, I got better.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a weird wasteland thing, though.
No, I think that's just a generic one.
Oh, yeah. So definitely an authorial voice in there. Yeah. But I don't know. It's definitely Monolith. What? Is that the company? Obsidian. There we go. Obsidian.
Monolith. Bethesda, Obsidian.
Yeah, you know, it's all good. One of them just developed Fear, that's fine. No, it's definitely Obsidian leaning into what they know people kind of like about these things. And then, like, that's also carry on the tradition of like in Fallout 1 and 2, there were the random encounters that would give you like Doctor Who's TARDIS or whatever. Like, it's all good.
Well, you need that to you know, counteract the other encounters where it's just like soul-crushing commentary on like people struggling to survive in this horrible world.
yeah man's inhumanity to man. So yeah, thank you everybody for responding to that. That is that brought out a lot of passionate responses, mostly about Fallout.
Yeah.
Sorry we didn't have much to say about the Fallout 4 stuff, but you know, time is a factor. Yeah, so if you want to participate in these going into the future, just follow us or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and those generally go up on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Since there is one big title that has come out, I'm going to throw to Ben and David to talk about Fallout 4.
Yeah. And you can talk about it yourself, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Do you want me to intro it?
Yeah, go ahead. So Fallout 4, this is a game from an upstart developer.
A little known developer. They're starting with Bethesda.
They're starting with episode 4 like Star Wars did. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. weird, but
they have a lot of confidence behind it. Yeah. They already think that there's going to be prequels for it. No, I would say my commentary of it is, I'd say it's basically the same. It's a very similar engine as Fallout 3. It feels very much the same. The art style is very similar. I feel like the big mechanic that they've added to it is the base building system. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a similar system to what you had in Fallout Shelter, except it's three-dimensional and you can see the actual characters. And so I think an apt comparison is, you know, like Fallout meets The Sims. And yeah.
So I'm excited about this. I know some people are really not as jazzed and they're kind of hoping that this is optional. How is this kind of introduced as a system in the game?
There's a group of people that you are working with, and there's like little missions that you're kind of piecemeal fed, where it's like, hey, we could really use some beds around here. Mm-hmm. Can you make us a bed? You know? And so you have to get a certain number of supplies to do that. And then they're like, hey, we could really use clean water around here.
Couldn't we all?
Yeah. And so you're kind of introduced to the mechanics of building different things through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the only thing I'd say so far is I haven't been able to find any actual practical reason for doing it.
Yeah. I mean,
so like what I've heard is that once you establish this, it becomes a home base, which is something that Bethesda games have always given you late in the game, like as just a consistent place to go, like offload your gear. And also it gives you access to kind of like different merchants or the ability to kind of grow different ingredients so that you can like break them down into component parts that you can then craft into something else, either yeah. weapon mods or something else. Like having that consistent place where you can kind of build this up into a dependable source of those vital resources kind of seems to fit this new kind of emphasis on kind of junk not really being junk anymore, and you know, using every single part of the buffalo figurine.
Yes.
Yeah, that's, I would say, yeah, that's the case, although I know this is going into like my overall feel on the game. I really like the game. I really like the like core gameplay, the story. I think the actual design of the like the interface and you know how you control things is almost universally deplorable.
So is this the first time you've played a Fallout game on a console, or even yes. like Elder Scrolls on a console?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd be curious to see, because, you know, I'm playing it on a PC right now, but I'm playing it over a Steam Link with a Steam controller.
Sure.
So,
well, what I'm meaning is, like, one of the big ones is basically the way it works is there's no good way to just break down a item into that's in your inventory into its raw materials. You either have to throw it on the ground in your base and then like go into scavenging mode and break it down, or you have to store it in, or you just have to craft something and have it automatically break it down. The problem is the system for automatically breaking it down is stupid. So it's not designed to like prefer to break down things that have low cell values per weight versus things that are really intended to be sold to vendors.
Okay.
So like a big one early on is cigarettes are a source of
delicious life supplying tobacco.
Yeah, well, no, our also true, but our source of cloth, which you need for a lot of like the armor crafting, and it's fairly rare, at least at the beginning, but they're also like very valuable. So, and the game has a tendency to just want to break down your cigarettes, even if you have things that aren't inherently valuable that it could break down.
So is the problem that you don't want to break down the things yourself?
Oh, the problem is if I could just go into my inventory and select an item and choose breakdown, that would be great.
You can do that.
Chuck it on the ground.
You don't have to throw it on the ground. If you go up to the bench and press like square, you can break down an item. That's either in your inventory or on the bench that it's at.
Okay. I guess maybe this goes to the other thing, is they don't explain anything in the game. Yeah.
Discoverability probably is not as good as it could be.
Right. So maybe that's the thing. But yeah, I would say the other thing that's a little bit wonky is vendors basically require you to have taken like the second level of the leadership perk. Which is basically means one, you can't get vendors in your settlement till you're in your like level 20 something, and two, you can't get leaders or vendors in your setting in your settlement at all if you're not playing a charisma build, because you can't take the perk.
I mean, that just seems to be incentivizing one build over another.
Right, except that isn't, doesn't that then kind of defeat the purpose of having builds if an entire system of the game is basically worthless unless you're playing one build?
I mean, like, you're not able to do like spellcrafting in Oblivion. I mean, it just kind of seems like it gives you the ability to attract different people. Like, it makes sense in the fiction of the game to attract different people with your charisma, as opposed to kind of having to go and outsource that stuff.
Well, you know, but also in fiction of the game, it makes sense that your character is going to quickly succumb to cancer. That doesn't make it good gameplay to, you know, have you do that.
Yeah, I just see it seems to be a way to reward people for putting that into it. And if you would just assume that that not having those things at your base is the norm.
See, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's truly optional. I think when the number one selling point of your game basically becomes meaningless without it, I don't think it's really optional.
Wait. So what's the mechanic that's the number one selling point? Having a merchant at your base?
The settlement system.
Yeah. Okay. So, but having a merchant at the base though?
That's the only, as far as I can see, that's the only thing that you can do with bases that actually has any practical impact on anything.
But there's like a whole farming kind of system. There's the fact that you can use it as your as like a place to keep all your stuff. Like, it's just the system having a home in Fallout 3 and Oblivion and Skyrim, except, you know, taken to an next logical extreme.
But so I want to understand though, what's the advantage of having the merchant at your base? Is just to get caps by selling them stuff, or
just being able to? My understanding is that's like the source of most of the rare items in the game.
Okay.
Or one of the better ways to get like rare items is my understanding.
There's also two perks with there's scavenger, and there's two levels to that perk that can have you get more rare items just by breaking items down.
Yeah.
In that. So I really like the game, but this is turning into things I don't like. I feel like I don't like the new leveling system just because I feel like there's a lot of perks that aren't really optional. I think scavenger is another one where basically when you break down items, there's the common crafting components that you can just always get. And then scavenger lets you get some of the rarer ones from it. But realistically, I think if you're going to be doing crafting to any degree, and basically the game's set up to have you be doing that, you have to take scavenger.
But I mean, so if you want to do it, then you can just prioritize that and go for it.
Okay.
So just. I'm going to do a strength and endurance run through just to spite you, David.
That's fine, but I think it's very clearly there's certain perks that there's a lot of perks that are things that aren't really optional. I don't think you actually have nearly as much control over your character simply because everything's been made so. Because there's just these, you know, clearly defined perks, there's a whole bunch of decisions that aren't really decisions anymore.
But I mean, if you weren't giving something up by making a choice, I don't understand what the point of having the choice would be.
But what I'm saying is you're not really making a choice. I guess what I'm saying is, like, yes, conceivably, I suppose there's a certain segment of the population that wants to play the game as like a really crappy Call of Duty. But I think realistically the game's built around, you know, it's, the actual exploration systems. I don't feel like there's as much flexibility as that. I feel like the perks I feel like I'm obligated to take to, you know, actually experience the game, you know, to have the basics of, you know, being able to pick locks and do the crafting system and stuff like that basically take up all my choices. So I, in effect, feel like I don't really have a choice.
But that's
so
always that, been the case with the series. Go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to ask, is that from a min-maxing standpoint or is it from like a fun standpoint?
I don't think it's a minimaxing standpoint. I think that's the problem. Is like in New Vegas, yeah, I had a certain minimum investment in like my locksmithing skill or locksmithing. I was running around locking all sorts of things. Come home for the day and find a lock on their door. Lock picking skill. But there was still a lot of options in terms of taking perks to be like a gunslinger versus a rifleman versus the random things for things that make it so like radiation heals you instead of damaging you, and basically there's no real option to take those perks anymore. Because so many of your slots are filled up with things you need just to kind of interact with the world.
But I'm going to liken this to morality system in like Knights of the Republic, where I'm going to say that the option's there. It's just that nobody probably wants to take it. But I would argue that the option's still there.
Oh, yeah.
I would say
that speaking, the option's there.
Yeah, the option's there, but it's something the Fallout games have always done. I mean, is it
I would say New Vegas did not do it.
I would say there's tons of content in New Vegas and in 3 that you just can't get to if you don't have something in security or in science. So like just like it makes sense to take one of those as like a content unlocking thing. And maybe it's not as like directly communicated to you that that it's there, but still you are kind of weighing that against your priorities for what you want out of this game. So if you're looking at this and making sure that you have, you know, the option available to you, it just makes sense to me to like that you're going to have to give up something, you know, that you want in order to get something that you want more.
No, what I'm saying is the difference is yes, there was already there, but you could reasonably make a character that was competent in like, you know, adventuring in the content unlocking traits while still having a lot of resources available to discretionary spend on like your combat abilities or just weird stuff. Whereas in this, the unlocking the basic content stuff takes all of your points.
So I just I haven't played far enough in the game to know this, but I find it hard to believe that it's not, you know, that it's a matter of locking yourself out of being able to successfully do combat for the entire amount of the game. Like maybe you can't get to it as early as possible. But like, I mean, there are plenty of situations. Like it's something they set up like in the tutorial of this game where there is a lock. There's a weapon in a case that you can't unlock at the very beginning of the game, and the character says like, "Oh, I'll be coming back for you later." Like that is definitely setting up the idea that like there's going to be some stuff that you can't do, and as you evolve, this is going to, you know, incentivize you to come back to it, right? Sure. So you just have to engage with these systems in a less, you know, kind of aggressive, you know, notion as you are kind of like slowly building to it or quickly building to it at the exclusion of something else.
Yeah, I'm not saying you have to go full one way or the other. I'm just saying I think they made the system by making the system so much more streamlined. I don't think it works right anymore in terms of doing that.
But it's basically it's the same system. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's the same system from Skyrim, right? Where you have a tree of stuff that kind of like emanates from each of the letters in special, right? So you're investing points in strength based stuff or investing points in perception based stuff, as opposed to just having a big sheet that you can a big sheet of skills that you can just put stuff in without any kind of like prerequisite, right?
Somewhere in between. There's no tree. But each ability is aligned with a stat.
Okay.
And you have to have a certain number of, I think it's each point you put in a stat unlocks one perk line.
Yes.
However, the perk lines are completely linear, and you don't have to take like the one charisma perk before you take the two charisma perk.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
And I would say, I think my problem with it is just it's very flat. You know, whereas in like New Vegas, you know, say I leveled up and I got 10 skill points per level, I could decide that like I want to spend, you know, 5 of them on a content opening skill like lockpicking, and 5 of them on like small arms. Whereas this, since it's one point per skill, and you either have that skill, or 1 point per level, and you either have the skill or you don't. It's I think it's too flat.
Okay. Well, yeah. So the way they changed it out is so that if you have a high intelligence, then you gain more experience. So you're supposed to level up more frequently, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and that does seem to be like a pretty big change between the old system, but you're still not boxed out of any skill set because you can always upgrade the special perks that you have instead of upgrading a perk.
Right. And then... Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I agree. That's definitely the case.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I kind of take a little bit of exception to the idea that because something is made a banner feature of the game, or like, hey, here's the new thing here, that you should just kind of automatically be given access to it. Like, something that I love about these games, going all the way back to, you know, like Deus Ex or Vampire the Masquerade, is that, you know, everything that it goes back to the idea that to get something you really want, you have to give up something you want.
Except that's never been the case. Like, I mean, in like I said, in all of those games, you because the system had flexibility in the way you built, you could build. Like, I agree.
I don't see how you're giving up the flexibility aside from the fact that you just kind of get the one per level.
I'm saying the one per level basically does destroy the flexibility. What I'm saying is, from what I've seen, it's very much either you can do this or you can't. There's not much in the way of like you know, I can spend some things in it to do this mediocrely.
See, so one reason why I didn't mind this is because sometimes you would have levels in the previous games where it would be like a punt. So like with lockpicking and computer terminal hacking, for example, like it was every 25 points, mm-hmm. like you would unlock a new ability, right? And so even if you were like maxed out on intelligence, like you might have like 12 skill points. And so even if you put like all of them in that perk, like it would be like a punt of a level up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I do, one part I didn't like about the new system is, yes, like I did like the idea of being rewarded for maxing out intelligence and getting like maximum level up abilities of skills. Like, mm-hmm. I did enjoy that benefit in the previous games, and that's kind of taken away here.
Yeah.
So one thing I do like about this is you are given enough special points at the start to basically, you know, have access from the beginning of the game to like the high level skills and ability. While still having enough special points in your other stats to be a viable character. And yeah. since it's not a tree, that means that some of the weird things like you can unlock right away. So like your first level, you could unlock the ability that like radiation now heals you.
Yeah.
And so I do kind of like that you can jump directly into just some of the weird perks if you want to. I just don't think the game really makes that viable.
That just sounds so much more flexible to me.
And to be clear though, you can only unlock the first step of those perks because the next steps are gated by level.
Yeah.
Right. And and I agree.
I don't know. We're kind of coming up on time. I just know that we probably have some more stuff to talk about. Either Ben or David, did you have anything else besides Fallout 4 to hit?
I had one more thing.
Good.
I had the Talos Principle, which I beat last week.
Okay.
And so I know I talked about it maybe 2 weeks ago, and I just mentioned it was like a puzzle game. It continues being like Portal in the arc of the game. It's good. I like it. There's good puzzles in it, so I was pretty happy with it. Yeah, so I'll just say there's solid puzzles in it. It's yeah, so I enjoyed it a lot. The ending was good. Yeah.
Did the story ever become anything more than the what is the meaning of existence in artificial intelligence
kind of thing? There's a twist or a reveal of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So depending upon how much you thought about the game, it may be a surprise or it may not be a surprise. But but yeah, I mean, I thought it was satisfying. So
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Does that have a expansion?
It does, and I have it, but I haven't played it.
Okay.
I've only played like the first level of it.
Are you curious enough about the game to go into the expansion?
Yeah. I might do it later down the line because it is more puzzles basically, but that itch has been scratched. So I'm not too keen to jump back into it yet, but I think it's probably something that I'll come back to later.
Yeah. Okay. David, how about you? Do you have any other games you played?
I've been playing through Leviathan.
Okay.
I continue. It's a good game. I continue to not be entirely sure what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see, kind of where it goes, because right now there's a lot of stuff in it that's just really weird and like a very direct way, if that makes sense.
Like in an off-putting way or like,
no, more just in terms of like, there's things that are happening that's very weird that the game doesn't seem to be recognizing as weird in a way that makes sense. So pretty early on, basically, you and your friends are participating in black magic to summon a demon. And there's no setup for this. It's just like, hey, why, it's almost presented as this Leave It to Beaver-esque, oh man, 12-year-olds, am I right? One of the weirdest exchanges in any game I've ever played is what you're going through the list of reagents and one of them is the head of the head from a dead thing, and the character who's the kind of the dorky mama's boy that is always getting picked on, he's that's your friend, he's oh yeah, I use this head of this I found this dead homeless lady and cut off her head, and you're oh, they, you're so silly, you should have just cut off the head of a kitten, and then the game goes on with its shit.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that where it's I'm not sure. I think some of it is I haven't quite figured out if it's supposed to be surreal or if it almost comes across it's supposed to a little bit be almost a Twilight Zone-esque sort of take on kind of sinister and morbid.
Okay.
Type of thing.
Just kind of here's a world with wildly different values than you probably have.
Right. And it seems like it very much could be setting up for we're screwing with things we probably shouldn't be, and it's going to have consequences.
Hmm.
I know. It's It's interesting. Like it's very, very well done. You know, excellent artwork. You know, some interesting writing. I'm not sure I quite get it yet.
Is this the first visual novel you've played?
Yeah, I would say definitely yes. Definitely. It's definitely the first in terms of like if you're excluding you know, adventure games or walking simulators, it's the first straight up visual novel I've ever played.
Okay. And
so I don't know if that's a thing, maybe.
I like the idea of walking simulators being visual novels.
I like the idea of a walking simulator basically being 3D quap. You're just constantly falling and you have to catch yourself over and over again.
Yeah,
that Twitch plays quap.
It would have made Gone Home a lot different, though. And I still love the like random like cyberpunk steampunk slash fantasy thing they've got going on.
Oh yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, I got a lot of quick hits. I did some traveling in the past couple weeks, so I played on my Vita, as always, and gave Kickbeat and Broken Age a try.
Okay.
Which were both interesting in their own ways. So Kickbeat is a rhythm game slash fighting game where the quote-unquote notes that come down towards you from... you know, Guitar Hero style are actually villains or bad guys, and you have to press like the right button at the moment they attack to counter their attack and kind of knock them away. Cool. And so, yeah, it's a really cool concept. You know, I like rhythm games in general, and this is just a take on it that I hadn't seen elsewhere. So it's played just with the face buttons on your controller. So relatively simple. And the, you know, all the enemies are in a circle around you. So it feels like you're getting ganged up on in a fight. And then they'll kind of step in to the light or step in so that you know that they're there and then circle like a 90 degrees around you and then attack. So they're not all coming down a line like you would think of in Rock Band or Guitar Hero or any games like that. It's circular. Which is a cool twist, but you kind of have to relearn how to read the notes coming at you. And you know, like I was forced to go all the way to the, you know, I picked it up and I'm like, oh yeah, I know rhythm games. I can go to the hard difficulty off the bat. Nope. I had to go all the way back down to easy where it's like, you know, one press per bar of music, and relearn from the beginning. But then the color of the note, doesn't signify which button you have to press. The color of the note or bad guy signifies the timing with which you have to press it.
Oh, wow.
And so like, you know, if it's a blue bad guy, you know that it's going to be like quick. Yellow bad guys are usually like on the main four count. And then red bad guys come two at a time. So you have to push two of the buttons on the pad at once. So again, it's like, it's everything is just kind of a quarter turn from what's standard in the rhythm game, which is, you know, it was fun to relearn a system like that. When you go into so many of these guitar games, I imagine, Cole, it's kind of a much smaller version of what you talked about with Guitar Hero Live, where like all of a sudden it's a completely different construct than what you're used to, but it feels good to master something like that.
I mean, it sounds similar, like in Guitar Hero Live, you're still looking at notes that are coming at you vertically. Like this seems like a much bigger visual departure.
It is, yeah. So that's, you know, it was fun for its novelty. It's hurt by the fact that it's got a really small track list. I think there's only like 18 songs on it in total, and the track list just isn't my style. So it's like Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie. It's all kind of more on the metal side of things. Which fits okay for a fighting game, right? But I would have loved to see them do more of other kinds of tracks that would fit in an action movie. So the final boss, I forget the name of the track, but like the track for the final boss is a lot more electronica than anything that came before it, to the point where it like stood out to me as noticeably different from all these kind of screamo bands. And I liked that one a lot. Like they just, it felt really good. It had much more of a flow to it than some of the metal stuff did. And I would have loved to see more of that in the game.
Yeah.
So small track list, not my favorite genre track list. But the game is just dripping with personality, and it's just a really fun novelty if you like rhythm games.
See, I really like the rhythm game as like rhythm as a kind of metaphor. It's not the right word, but I'm going to say that for like combat. I really sure. wish I would love to see that replace QuickTime events in terms of like when you need a way to make. Yeah, like action that's happening on screen, interactive. I feel like that. I would love to see that as a way to make quick time events that aren't just completely random.
Hmm. Sure. So instead of press as fast as possible, it's press in time with a rhythm.
Or even like just instead of it being like, you know, flash this button on screen. Hope you remember which one's square. Like actually have them be, you know, coming down the line so that you can, you know, kind of anticipate and get into the rhythm of the scene and have a reasonable chance of getting it without having to just play the scene five times in a row.
We're looking at you, Tomb Raider. Has anyone heard yet if Rise of the Tomb Raider does away with some of the QuickTime shenanigans?
Don't have an Xbox, so I don't know.
I know that Damn. That's actually something I was wondering with Twitch is I feel like. Like, at least Tomb Raider, as I played it, would not be something you'd want to watch on Twitch because no one wants to watch me fail the same QuickTime event, you know, 15 times in a row.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so that's Kick Beat.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah, a diversion. I mean, I played through it on in two sittings on you know, flights totaling less than 3 hours. So
nice.
You can, and that was just on easy mode. It's also got a lot of story. Like the game, like I said, the game is dripping with personality, but they almost spend too much time on the story in between songs, and I just wanted to play the next song.
Oh yeah.
So that was annoying. And I could have skipped it at any time, but then I felt like I was missing something. So
yeah,
that was probably more of a personal quirk. But then the other game I played while I was traveling was Broken Age, which is like a point and click adventure. I want to say it was. Not a Tim Schafer game.
Tim Schafer. It's Double
Fine. Yeah, Tim Schafer. There we go.
Yeah,
Double Fine. And it, another game that's just dripping with personality. Cole, have you played this one?
No, I haven't. A very kind listener gave it to me about a year back, and I have very unkindly, not played it yet. But
okay.
I'm curious about it. It's definitely one that I want to play because I like games in this tradition. But
yeah, sure. And I think the thing that I'm dying to know is if how slowly everything loads is a function of it being on the Vita. Because, you know, I have nothing against point-and-click adventures, and the story of the game was really intriguing to me and kept me playing much longer than my patience would normally allow, just because every time I needed to change a screen or walk from one place to another, it was so much waiting. You know, you wait for the character to get to the side or hopefully you can double click and skip that. But then there's like this 5 second period where it's loading the next screen, which I don't understand because the art assets aren't like super intensive or anything.
And that's weird, too, because like loading times usually associate those with like disc based media, at least in adventure games. And, you know, the idea like you got this off of PS Plus, just like I did. So,
yeah.
So, you know, like it's just loading off of flash memory. So,
yeah, there's no reason. So I have to imagine it's something that happened in the port over that slowed it down. But so, you know, that complaint aside. The kind of gimmick of the game is that there are two seemingly completely unrelated stories that you can flip back and forth between at any time and kind of follow these characters through their individual scenarios. And just the scenarios are really, really creative. So one is a boy that's kind of trapped on a spaceship. And you kind of get the feeling he's been there for a really long time without outside interaction. And you're not sure why he's trapped there or what exactly is going on. And then the other one is a girl who was meant to be kind of a sacrifice, I guess, to a Mog Trothra, like, you know, terror of the void that comes through a village and they, you know, sacrifice someone to it every time it comes through, but she escapes and is trying to find a way to fight it. So just the scenarios in and of themselves are really, really creative. And there's lots of, you know, witty dialogue and just in general Tim Schaferness about the game to love. I just wish it moved a little faster. So I'm not very far. Like, but go ahead.
It looks like Jack Black and Elijah Wood do voices in it too.
Oh, wow. I didn't even pick that up.
Maybe you haven't gotten to their characters yet. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure now that you met, the second you said that, I could see the main boy character is Elijah Wood, I think.
Huh.
How about that? Huh.
Neat.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. There's also been just kind of like the slightest hint that maybe these worlds are connected in some way. Like maybe one is a story from another or something like that. Like it's very vague. And I kind of look forward to the idea of figuring that out.
Yeah. You're only in episode one too, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I also want to shout out that Pendleton Ward does a voice in this as well.
Cool. I gotta look this up now and see who's, but yeah. On top of that, I just super quickly, I'll talk about Hearthstone again because I actually gave the game money for the first time.
Oh, wow.
They released a new expansion and I knew exactly what cards I was getting, so I dropped it. I could have tried to grind through and buy everything with in-game gold, but it just felt like, yeah, it was time. But I also, unrelated to buying the expansion, reached rank 10, which I think is like top 15% in the world or something like that. So it was not with cards that I bought. It was just randomly two things that happened in the game. And then going on a Blizzard fan fest, I guess, I bought Diablo 3, the Ultimate Evil Edition for PS3.
Okay.
And started a co-op game with Jen. We only played about an hour and a half or so. So we're still very early on, but that's a fun co-op romp that I will talk about in a future episode.
Awesome. Thanks. Which class are you guys rolling?
We're doing lots of hitting things very hard. So I'm the barbarian and she's the crusader.
Okay.
Which are both the melee strength based classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So we're running up against time. We have an external thing pressing and cutting this episode a little bit short, so I'm going to skip mine. I had something that I played specifically for tonight, but it's very short.
Give us a
taste.
Diversion, which is a Flash game that you can play for free, but there's also a high-def version available for Steam that is a platformer that is not what it seems. Yeah, that's all I want to say about it.
How do you spell Eversion?
Eversion.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So you guys want to button it up?
Let's button it up.
We didn't even talk about StarCraft.
No. Did any of us play StarCraft?
No.
Okay.
Wait, what? Is there a story here?
They made an expansion this last week.
5 years later.
That's a total blind spot on this podcast. So,
I really like StarCraft, but only for the storyline.
So this should be good because it finishes out the story.
See, but I feel like the problem is what I really should do is watch a Let's Play of someone who's actually competent at the game.
I don't know, maybe, or just read the wiki summary. It's all good. Yeah. Let's see here. So thank you very much for listening. If you're listening to this on Friday, it's my birthday. It's the 20th.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. Also the Duckstream charity event is starting up. So, go to duckfeed.tv and look for that information there. Watch that in support of the Transactive Gender Center out in Portland. We'd really love to have you there. It's going to be a fun time. Let's see, other stuff, you know, the usual things, the Facebook, the iTunes, the Patreon. We are really coming up against time. So tell your friends, all that good stuff. Am I forgetting anything?
No, tell your friends is the big one. Leave a review.
Yes,
have a good Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes. We're not going to have an episode next week. I just made that decision. I'm going to be home on Tuesday, like that night.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So everybody enjoy your holiday, and we'll be back on the other side with more good stuff. Sorry to leave you in the lurch like that. But yeah, just family realities. Blah.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on the Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yep, and stick around for the titles. All right. I'm going to read the four that I have, and if anybody else has any, then we will add those to the list. Method Foley, The Inanity Meter.
Yes.
Mean good... Facebook. Venge of the Re Variety.
You had mine, which was The Inanity Meter. Inanity,
yeah, I feel like meter. Either Inanity Meter or Mean Facebook would be kind of the ones I'd be.
Okay.
I wrote down Venge of the Re Variety, and I also wrote down Blackout Box, but I'm good with any of those. So
okay, let's it sounds like we're fairly split. Let's see what the Slack says.
Sure.
All right.